the XR Motion Podcast with your hosts, Michael Steinberg and Andrew Hogue.
All right, welcome to the XR Motion Podcast. Oh, you know, the place where we go over everything. AR, VR, 3D, Metaverse, NFTs, AI, I don't know, you name it, we go over it. We've got a very fun episode planned today, definitely unique. I'm excited to get into it. But before we go into that, we have the world's greatest co-host, Andrew. How's it going today, bud?
I am good, man. How are you?
I'm doing great. I believe today is the first day of spring, correct?
Dude, I certainly hope so because I'm ready for it. Actually, this weekend was really nice. We had St. Patrick's Day on Friday, so had a friend come in and visit who I hadn't seen in like 4 years from San Diego. We went out all weekend, had some really nice weather. Just being out past 6 p.m. and it not being completely black, you know, outside is just like such a relief. So it's been great. I'm stoked that spring is here. It's definitely starting to feel like it.
It's so amazing. I was walking this weekend with my dog and I'm just looking around. I'm in Brooklyn with Olive, baby cute, adorable Olive. And I swear, everyone's face was like this.
Yeah, geeking.
I'm like, why is everyone smiling? What is this? You know, it was a great feeling. I'm so happy.
But yeah, great time to be in New York for sure. I feel absolutely. Like summer to fall and winter to spring, just it's a nice relief on both accounts. So it's been great.
Mm-hmm. So moving on, we do have our guest with us today. It's Logan Shanahan. Logan.
We went over this.
It is Logan Shanahan.
So I feel like the way it's spelled phonetically looks different than if I just shouldn't. The phonetic stuff throws me for a loop. Anyway, based in California, San Diego, current 3D motion designer student at Pratt Institute in Brooklyn. No way, yes way. Logan is a relative newcomer to the 3D scene with a background in fine arts, graphic design, and video editing. Motion design is his current frontier of artistic expression. Currently, Logan is working his senior thesis with a short film for school, which you did tell me a little bit about. Super excited to go into that. And is working freelance whenever opportunities arise. And soon he'll be available for hire. For him, visual flair comes first, of course. And creating eye-catching work is always a goal as he aims for a career in look development. Ladies and gentlemen, it is Logan. How's it going?
Thank you. Yay. Thank you. I'm glad I can finally talk now. You guys are talking about spring. You haven't introduced me yet. So, my lips are shut. But I can speak now. Yes, I'm very happy. I'm happy to be here. I'm happy. It is spring. It's nice. What a time. It's 7:13 and I can still see out my window. It's great. Thank you guys for having me. Always, I've been really loving the content you guys have been outputting, and I'm glad I can be part of it now.
Nice. Well, we're glad you're here.
Thank you. Yeah. Man, I do have a question. There's only one thing that kind of made me have a question mark on your bio. You're always in California, I feel like, at least in the summers. And then you're here a lot of times. I mean, you're going to college here. Do you consider yourself like a Californian or like a New Yorker? Like what's your...
You know, that is a very interesting question. In fact, whenever I go and talk to new people and they always ask you, oh, where are you from? Right. And that's not a very simple question for me because, you know, California, New York, but also for the first half of my life, I've lived in Minnesota, in the Twin Cities.
Wow.
Which, you know, that's sort of where I quote unquote grew up. But what I tell people mostly is San Diego, because that's where I feel a lot of my cultural, where I am culturally, right? Wow. That's where all like my friends are. That's where my family lives. And that's sort of where I grew up and matured.
If you start going down in like Texas area, you could just say you're American. I'm a man of America. I'm everywhere.
Everything's bigger in Texas.
So you do split your time between New York and San Diego?
Definitely. Yeah. How it's been like going out is I spend my school year here in New York. And then usually in the summers is when I go back home to California. Maybe I spend some time in Minnesota, visit my other family there. But then, you know, for school, always here, always in Brooklyn. In fact, I'm probably going back around May to California for my birthday, going on vacation, things like that. So
nice. That's exciting. So yeah, that kind of leads us nicely into the next question, which would just be, you're at Pratt, you're finishing up school. What are you studying, and what is your projected major?
I'm currently in the last semester of my third year. It's a little confusing because I'm working on my senior project. And I'm currently going for the 3D animation program.
Nice.
Projected to graduate in May of 2024. So still a little bit of ways to go, but I am having a great time. I'm learning a lot for sure. And I think I'm one of the lucky ones who sort of picked the right major, the right path. And I'm really loving it. And I'm planning on sticking with it.
Nice. Wow. That's amazing. Now,
I gotta ask, you have, in our industry, we always hear people say, you don't need to go to college. You can just learn on YouTube.
I knew we were talking about this.
And, you know, and I love it because your work, I feel like, does stand out, especially for somebody that's just kind of been getting into it recently. How do you feel personally? And obviously, feel free to be biased, but how do you feel personally being at a college and learning this stuff? Are you glad you did it? Do you feel like you're definitely learning more than you would have just on YouTube? What's kind of been like your experience when it comes to the education factor?
That is a fantastic question, and one that I ponder a lot, because you're right. A lot of the people I meet don't go sort of the linear, like go through college like an art school and then get an internship and then start like an entry level career. I think the whole prospect of freelancing really throws a wrench in that, because people are able to just learn Blender, learn Unreal Engine on YouTube, not pay a single cent, and become competent enough to start a career in freelancing. And that is able to sort of be that stepping stone to start their career into doing bigger and better things.
Mm-hmm.
As for what is the right option, I don't think there is a right option. I'm doing it this way just because having a bachelor's in anything is a good idea. It'll get me anywhere I need to go. And, you know, education, no matter what it is always worth it. But there is definitely an argument to be made for not spending $300,000 to make the funny little guys move and just learning it on YouTube.
Well, yeah, certainly. I mean, I think there's also, you know, another side of this conversation that I hear a lot that I agree with is, you know, there's something to be said about learning structure and learning how to, you know, get yourself organized. And in terms of school, usually there is like, this is your project, this is how long you have to work on it, this is the deadline. I mean, those skills are as important many times, especially once you get into your, you know, the career phase of being a creative. Some of those things are just as important as the technical. Can you actually do things? Can you use these programs? Can you output something that's, you know, moving or looks good? You know, if you don't have project management, or you know, you're not able to craft an idea from start, you know, conception to rendering, you might be the best 3D artist in the world, but you might feel a little lost, because all of those skills are definitely something that, regardless, I mean, that's, I think, probably why you find a lot of people in motion design who might not even have a background, you know, formally in it, and who have just found themselves here, but maybe they came from project management, maybe they came from web development or something, and they have that understanding of, here's a complex project, you know, let's break it into steps and actually get to the end result.
No, you're absolutely right. And that's basically the same thing that my department head always says, because for our like big projects, for instance, my senior thesis is a 4-minute short film that we are 100% responsible for in every way, shape, and form. Everything from conception, like conceptual, like storyboarding, screenwriting, you know, drawing all the like character sketches, rotation sketches, sculpting, modeling, texturing, animation, rigging, compositing, rendering, absolutely everything. It has to be done by us, and we cannot outsource it to anybody else, which is challenging and incredibly difficult for sure. But it does, like you said, teach me a wider variety of skills, and allows me to learn what I need to improve in a way that I don't think just sort of working on my own personal projects or doing freelance, which might just be like, oh, I want to model this, or, oh, I want to like make a cute animation of this, doesn't teach you how to do all these other important things, doesn't teach you how they all interconnect, which is something that I think you need to have a solid understanding of. Otherwise, you're just going to be a one-trick pony.
Right. Yeah. And in many ways, you're given an environment where you know, you're able to fail and, you know, you it's, I think about doing, I've been doing client work for so long where it's like, the last thing you want to do is be on a client project and start floundering because at that point you're contractually obligated to certain things or, you know, you're expected to, you know, perform at a certain level. So, so being able to have an environment to do that and learn, like you said, learn your limitations, which you mentioned your senior thesis as well. I would love to hear a little bit more. You know, you mentioned it's a 4-minute animated short film. You're solely responsible for, honestly, for many people, I think a dream to be able to take the time to, you know, to craft a story and bring a vision to life. Do you want to talk a little bit about your thesis and what you're going
to do? It is a huge undertaking for sure. We are given 15 months to start and finish this project. A very big project for sure. As for what it is, as for what it's going to be, and I'm currently still in a very like pre-production, very early stage of this because it is the first semester I'm working on it. What it is going to be, hopefully, assuming that everything goes to plan, is going to follow, the general story is going to follow two scientists who create an interdimensional wormhole and they accidentally get lost in another universe. And from there, they have to find their way back to, you know, their original universe by jumping through the wormhole through like a dozen or so different universes. But here's where it gets interesting. Each universe is going to be represented by a different visual style. So you'll start off in like a regular Pixar 3D kind of style. Then you jump to like a hand-drawn scribbly pencil texture one. Then you jump to like an anime, like 2D hand-drawn one. Then you'll jump to like a matrixy wireframe looking one, and so on and so forth. Nothing is really set in stone at this point, but the idea is to just sort of squish as many different unique visual styles into one film as I possibly can without it being too ridiculous.
Nice. That's amazing.
That's so fun. It's so
a very fun exercise, very challenging exercise.
Definitely, definitely.
Yeah, if you're you can put generalist on the reel and nobody can deny.
No, but I mean, honestly, what a great way to showcase, you know, to be able to achieve that number of visual styles. I mean, I feel like a lot of times it's not just being, you know, sometimes it might be I have to really nail the modeling or the lighting, you know, in the case of photorealism, or if you're doing something hand drawn, you might be like, maybe I'm not a cell animator, but there's maybe some good compositing techniques that I can use to generate this style. You know, you really do end up in exploration of style. I feel like you end up trying to utilize as much of the skill, as much of your tool set as you can. So
definitely.
I want to ask, you know, I feel like one of the biggest things that colleges offer that it's hard to get when you don't go or just being by yourself. And that's a community. I guess how is that kind of like the collaboration or at your college?
Yeah, that's a great question. And it's interesting because Pratt's a relatively big school, especially for here in New York.
Yeah.
But the thing is, the majority of those students are in other majors, you know, communication design, graphic design, film, architecture, industrial design. Whereas my department, really, in my grade, you know, the people who I've been with this whole time is only made up of around 20-ish people.
Wow.
Yeah, much smaller than you would initially imagine. And so you do become pretty intimately familiar with these people, for better or for worse. But it's nice because I can see these people grow and I recognize these people's styles and I know what they're good at. I know what they're bad at, not bad at, that they can improve upon. And that's really good because, you know, like you said, the networking for that is great. Having a community, like now I know, like, oh, if I want to work on this kind of project or if someone approaches me asking for this kind of thing, I'm like, well, I can't do that, but I know who can. And like, I know a lot of my classmates are great people and I would have absolutely no problems like referring them to my classmates who I'm like, oh yeah, this person, my friend here, wonderful person, always gets their stuff done on time and is fantastic. Can't go wrong with them.
Nice.
That's awesome. Do you guys like ever, you know, wear like matching leather jackets? People are like, oh shit, it's the 3D modelers.
Oh like, yeah, no, we're the bad boys.
Roll
Pratt,
up
for sure.
On the wheelies, you know.
Yeah,
that's sick.
Yeah,
I'm envisioning it now.
Yeah, no, for sure. You know us, us 3D nerds. We're the real intimidating ones at school.
That's right. That's right. Watch out, you know. Yeah. Watch you.
No, we're all just a bunch of nerds.
Check yourself before I never mind. I was gonna make a really bad.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of a joke too.
I was gonna say like you simulation break yourself, but that's just without
baking. You gotta,
I don't.
Yeah, it's just the nuances. It's too much nuance.
I need ChatGPT real time. Well, that's awesome, man. I'm super excited. So what programs are you using there? Like, do they have kind of a plethora of programs? Is that something where you go into college and they're kind of like, these are the classes, these are the programs that we're using? Or is it kind of like, this is the general aspect of animation, you can select your programs? How does kind of the learning process work?
That is one of the things that is fantastic about going to like an institution for learning these things, is that we have access to basically every tool under the sun at no extra cost. We have to, you know, if you're part of the digital arts program, you have to pay for that. But we have access to basically every program that you can think of, right? Of course, we mostly work in Maya for our animation, but we have the entire Autodesk suite, of course, the whole Adobe suite. We have, I forget what, Maxon, that's like the ZBrush and Cinema 4D. Yeah, Maxon, we have the whole Maxon suite. Basically everything, really. Nuke, we have more tools than I even can like count, like list right now.
Wow.
And that's great. And not even just digital tools. We also have access to several like sound recording studios. We have access to photogrammetry studios.
Wow.
Countless 3D printers, just everything that you could possibly imagine, for like laser cutters, what are the things that like bend metal, like a CNC machine, Leland, I don't know.
Yeah, CNCs, yeah. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, those
that's a huge advantage. You know, to be able to have the resources to experiment with new technology as it comes out. And, you know, a place like Pratt, which I think there's a lot that Pratt has going for it, namely just being Pratt in New York City, you know, there's a certain, it's kind of held in a certain regard. And I think it sounds like they're priding themselves on having sort of the latest and greatest, and to be able to experiment with those technologies is huge. I mean, I remember 3D printing came out, and it was actually the first time a lot of people were like, oh yeah, you do 3D. Like, have you been 3D printing? It's like, well, no, because like, I'm not going to go and buy a 3D printer. Just
I don't have like $8,000 to spend
just to
on this
find
right
out
now.
I'm terrible at 3D printing. Like, if I had the opportunity to, you know, collab on a project, or a client, you know, was willing to foot the bill or something. Yeah, absolutely. But so amazing that you're able to experiment with those kind of technologies.
I can't even imagine having an artistic playground like that, where you can just any creative thought, have any tool you want. That's so fun. I also want to give a little bit of a shout out to, because, you know, I went to community college, wasn't great. I was very much self-taught as well, like kind of had a mixture of both, if you will. For anybody that is maybe thinking about college, maybe you can test to this or maybe you'll disagree, but it is so much easier and to learn. And I felt like I always ingested and like retained the information more when I was with somebody that could answer any question I asked. I always had somebody that was there, and whenever I was working on something, they'd be like, that's a cool dragon animation, but also you can do this to make it better. And that's like, you know.
Yeah, and I mean, that's kind of the thing I feel like a lot of people forget about education and educators in general. Good educators are people that can write good curriculum. It's not just about having a good persona in front of a classroom and, you know, being able to answer questions, but also to be able to craft a curriculum where you're learning things that are building on things that you've learned previously. You know, the only other place that you really get that kind of experience, and again, we've talked about it earlier, you don't really want to learn trial by error when you're on a client project, right? Mm-hmm. But if you have a curriculum that's like, you're learning the basics of modeling, and then you're learning how to add detail with sculpting, and then you're learning how to light that scene to accentuate the model that you just built. I mean, those, if you're self-taught or you're self-directed in learning, you not only have to have the, you know, the motivation and desire to learn specific skills, but then you also have to take the time to research, what skills am I even supposed to be learning right now? So to have that barrier removed must be, you know, I think is very often can be a very positive thing in terms of being able to learn more and output more.
Certainly. No, just like Michael, like you said, just the ability to ask questions, because you can learn something on YouTube, right? You can learn how to, let's say, I'll give you an example. I retopologize something on YouTube, right? And that's how I did it at first. I probably started learning Maya a year before I started learning it in school, just so I could have a head start. But for some reason, it wasn't working, right? I was doing everything that it was telling me to, the YouTube tutorial was telling me to, but it wasn't until I was able to ask a question of someone who could just like sit down and look at my scene. They're like, Logan, like you're trying to retopologize two high res meshes at once. And that's just not how that works. And I was like, what do you mean? That's not how that works. And they were able to just describe it to me. And I was like, oh, you know, there's like silly mistakes that are so easy to fix and like understand and just like instantly, but a YouTube tutorial doesn't specifically go over that one thing, that one problem that you're having. Mm-hmm. Is if you're just never going to figure it out unless you have someone that's able to just be like, okay, that's what's wrong. It's like, oh, I didn't like run IPR my render. That's why nothing's working. The screen's black. Like,
yeah, that's awesome. I love that. Yeah. I feel like it's one of the most like useful things ever. Cause that just, yeah, YouTube tutorials can be really tough to learn at times, especially when it's something super specific. That's awesome. Now, one thing I find so fascinating, because there are so many times you hear people talk about college, not in our field, but in other fields, and they say how it feels impersonal or it feels like the professor doesn't care. Having, you know, because animation is still a small field, it's growing drastically.
Mm-hmm. It's still a small world, though.
But having just 20, do you feel like you get a lot of that one-on-one time with your professor and like you're able to ask questions kind of almost freely?
Without a doubt. Yeah. Like I said, my classes are so small and the studio sessions are long. I spend probably in my studio class alone, like my animation studio class, like the one where I'm working on my film, that's my main class, my core class. I spend, I think, 6 hours a week in that class. Which might not sound like a lot in terms of like a job, but that's 6 hours you're sitting in a room with the same 8 to 10 people, and you're just going over everybody's projects. And the nice thing too is that, like Andrew, you were mentioning, like having someone who can help build upon your knowledge. My professor for my current studio class, I've had last semester with, so she's already aware of what I'm strong at, what I'm lacking in, and she's able to guide me with all that knowledge in mind. And it's just it's so incredibly helpful to have someone who is aware of everyone's pros and cons. And it's not such a blank slate as like switching to a different professor every semester.
One thing I did, and this was actually huge for me in college, I think this is the thing that actually kickstarted my career. I'm curious if you've done this, but internships, is that something you've looked into? Is doing an internship while you're in college? Or
I've applied to some internships for sure over the summer. I don't think I want to do them while I'm actively doing school. Mm. I haven't gotten accepted to any of them because it is competitive. The ones that I Disney and Pixar and all the ones. So it's a competitive field for sure.
Yeah.
But no, not for like while I'm in school. I really want to focus. If I'm going to be doing, you know, a creative, you know, 3D animation kind of thing, I want it to be school. Cause I feel like if I'm hip hopping from one thing to the next, have to learn a whole new program, have to new workflow, do this and that, I'm going to get my things jumbled or I'm going to get burnt out. So
yeah. No, I definitely got burnt out. Well, exciting. Well, I guess moving back again, ping pong in here, but jumping ahead forward, so I know you said you didn't have any like specific like companies you wanted to join or fields, but like, let's just phrase this. And I'm curious here for you, especially at the point of your career, if somebody were to give you like, I don't know, $10 million to make any animation you wanted, right? Like an Avatar universe or anything of that field. What would you want to make? What would be kind of like your dream project?
Oh my God. I don't know. I feel like with $10 million. So yeah, the thing is, if you give me $10 million, I'm too logical. I would have to like make a studio. I don't think I could make a whole film on my own. Mm. I would hate it after a year of working on it.
Ah, okay.
And then restart and then just keep doing that forever and never finish anything. But with $10 million, I could definitely see myself opening up probably like a studio, something like that. As for what we would create, I have no idea. I do have a couple of just like very like rough ideas in the back of my mind that I would maybe like to flesh out someday. But nothing concrete. I don't really have a dream project right now. I'm really interested by the prospect of freelance work, sort of doing a vast amount of different projects, and improving different things, different, skill sets, hard and soft skills. I'm really enjoying the meeting new people and then working for them and through that meeting new people and just sort of expanding my web of connections is what I'm really on right now.
Mm. And sorry, I think taking the mic from Andrew here, but I want to say too, just because I don't even think we kind of just jumped into the school stuff, but going into your actual artwork, I mean, you have some awesome pieces. I mean,
oh geez, Mikey.
I'm just saying, like, they're not even just like necessarily super photorealism, but they're really creative. You know, I've seen you know, you have the one with the statues wearing sunglasses where I just
that one's a classic.
Love that. It's just so minimal, but mm-hmm. you know, it's like these X sunglasses. It's just fun. And then the wolf, I don't even get, it's like has the fur with like 100 eyeballs, but then it's also 2D mixed with 3D. I love that one. I mean,
thank you.
There's other ones I want to jump into, but I really want to hear about this, the wolf one. Like how did you do the 2D work? Was that a group project? Cause I mean, mixed media, I am a sucker for it. You know, mm-hmm. that stuff is just so cool.
Yeah. So that project is the first in a series I want to start. I don't have a name for the series quite yet, but there's just something about, let me pull it up so like even I know what I'm talking about. Cause it is sort of so hard to even imagine. Yeah.
It really has so many styles in it. Like it looks like it's illustration, but then it looks like it's also hand drawn, but then it's high end 3D. It's
So let me tell you the workflow on this. This was a study in, texturing, of course, XGen and sculpting. What I wanted to do, the goal of this project was to, like you said, mix as many forms of media as I could. And like I said, that's also sort of what I want to do for my film. That's what I'm interested in, is just sort of making things that look cool, right? And as for what part of your question, no, this is all done by me. This was all probably took place in about, I think I spent probably only 10-ish hours on it in total. Spread out. But the illustration was done by me, the hair, the sculpting, the texturing. I really enjoy like sort of the comic book kind of hard line textures. And I wanted to see if I could mix that with like hyper realistic fur. And I was like, well, how do I do that? I was like, you know what, let's just make a wolf that has like tentacle teeth and a million eyes and like looks crazy, you know? And so I want to start doing some more of those. Maybe just make things that are so unfathomably terrifying and just sort of put them on Instagram just for fun, you know, see what the deepest parts of my mind create.
I dig it. I really like it. So, and then I guess, I mean, I just want, cause I feel like this is a kind of a classic one. I do want to go back cause you have, your other pieces are great. I mean, you have some of the like cell shaded, kind of stuff, which is super fun. Well, actually, we'll jump into that. I mean, I guess what was that project that you were working on and what kind of was the inspiration behind it?
Are you talking about the one that has the halftone like comic book shading?
Yeah, halftone.
That was actually my last student film. The idea behind that was to make a film, but again, it was mostly about the visuals. That shader that makes it look like a comic book was written by me. It was an exercise in writing shaders just to see if I could. And I think it turned out great. And so I was like, okay, well now I have this, let's just make a goofy story of a guy who's sleepwalking, walking through a city and constantly almost like getting hit by cars and falling off buildings, but just getting back by the skin of his teeth. So that was a really fun project that took me about 4 months to make. But it was a fun project for sure.
Was the, you know, because the tune effect is really good. I've always thought cinema had one of the best ones, but it's got all the cross stitch in it fantastically. How did you achieve that effect? Is that something that's like Maya based, or is that something you did in After Effects? Or
it's all in Maya, all Arnold.
Wow, Arnold and Maya. Wow.
Yeah. So like in the actual file, when you render it, that's just what it looks like. Okay, I don't want to say I wrote it all completely by hand. Arnold has these like kind of OSL shader templates that you can use. But if you look at the hyper shade, it is just like this big web of nodes all tied into each other, because all the OSL shader really did was convert shading information into dots. So everything else I had to sort of like, you know, use all the arithmetic nodes to sort of sew it all together. It was basically a big Frankenstein monster project. And half the time it would crash my Maya, but I got it to work.
And he's walking like Frankenstein a little bit too. So. Well, that's great. Well, I think we're going to move here onto the future portion. Unless Andrew, you had anything, any other?
No, questions? I think perfect foray to talk about, you know, future technology and how it might be able to help you write OSL shaders that can convert lighting data into halftone.
All right. Well, let's do it. The future. Welcome to the future part of the show.
I was like, what am I missing here?
It's a little radio side. Yeah, this is the part of the show where we go over all the hypotheticals on where we think our field is going. Is the metaverse going to take over our lives? Is NFT going to be our main form of currency? Is AI going to be our overlord? Who knows? We're going to talk into it. There's no judgment here. It's just kind of saying what we're thinking. So I'm excited. One thing about having Logan on is you're young, you're hip. You get to tell us how computers work.
Oh, yeah.
And, I can do you that. Know, with the first question being, I am curious, being in a school environment, AI, what's your thoughts on it? And are your professors talking about it? Are your classmates talking about it? What goes on in your head when you think about it?
Now, of course, I don't have to tell you that it is a point of contention in the artistic community. People love it. People hate it. The thing is, in my field right now is, or at least for me practically, it doesn't really affect me just because I'm sort of in my own little bubble right now. I'm working on my film. We're not allowed to use, you know, AI, or we haven't specifically been told we're not allowed to, but it's sort of implied that like, oh, you can't have this thing do the work for you. But as far as my opinions go, I'm kind of neutral. I can understand the perspective of both people. I understand people don't want to lose their jobs to robots, but I can also understand that it's efficient and cuts down on labor. But the way I see it is of a tool. It's not HAL. It's not the Terminator. It's not gonna like it. It's not self-actualized yet. It's just an algorithm that does what it tells you to do, and it pulls across all these different databases and all these images, and it figures things out. Where it's going to be a year from now, I have no idea, right? No one could have foreseen it was going to be this crazy a year ago, and who even knows what? For all I know, like it's going to be like going on dates and taking my parents out for dinner on like a year from now, right? I have no idea. So I'm keeping an eye on it. I know that it's starting to make its way into the animation field, and I'm keeping my eye out on that because I am in a partway vulnerable position and also like advantageous position where I'm only probably going to be hired for more labor intensive, like entry level work as a student. And that's what AI is going to be good at. But also I'm young enough to be able to capitalize on it and maybe use it for my own good and purposes and use it as a tool for my workflow. So we'll see. It's too early to tell what it's going to be. It's still in its infancy for sure.
What tools have you used? Have you experimented with any AI tools? Maybe not, you know, you mentioned like your senior thesis, it's maybe unclear of whether or not you can or should, but just in terms of your personal experimentation, have you tried any of these tools?
Yeah. I have been using AI image generation as a sort of form of generating a reference for artwork. If I want to, like, if I have an idea, but it's like in such an infant form where it's just like a gray blob in the back of my mind, I have no clue what this thing like Mike, you said, like a crazy thing with like an alien with eight eyes and like wings. It's like you understand what that means, but you don't know what that looks like even in your own mind. And so like, I'll give you an example. One time I was like, you know what? I want to like draw like a worm god eating a sun. And I was like, well, okay. You know, I can kind of understand what that is, but what does that look like? And so I popped it into DALL-E and it gave me this absolutely incredible image. Maybe I can send it to you. It gave me this beautiful image and I was like, okay, I can work with this. And I know, you know, it's AI generated. So it's not like, it's basically custom the way it is, but I'm not just going to use that, right? I don't, that's not my art. That's just a tool. So that's what I use it for, as a tool. And so from that, I took it and then molded it and changed it. I kind of traced, I'm not going to lie, because the image was really cool. It had a really, really good composition. But I think that's sort of what I've been using it mostly for, is just sort of using it to kickstart the initial process to give me the inspiration. And then I can take it, you know, it gives me an inch and I take a mile and I'm able to finish it my way. Yeah.
Cool. Well, I think moving on here, we have, you know, again, young, hip, VR.
My back's already hurting. I'm not young anymore. Man.
I know you got all those dad hats in the background.
Yeah. So, you know. like playing chess now. Like, God.
they're funny enough with chess. I'm trying to get good at it. I cannot get out of the 700s. Embarrassing. But so with VR and AR, now, have you experimented with any of that? What's your thoughts on the field?
That is definitely something I want to explore more once I'm sort of done with my projects, my school, because, you know, that's taken up the majority of my focus right now. But that is definitely the next thing that I want to hop into. Coming to XR, going to all these different things, I feel like I meet the most people who are doing VR and AR, and I just think it's some of the coolest stuff I've ever seen. Just of course, you got the filters on Snapchat and Instagram. You like post like a helmet on you. You like do all some crazy stuff. I've been meeting a lot of cool people who just have been developing these different apps, these different filters, all these different crazy things. And even just like even what Shakespeare does, right? He does all this crazy stuff with AR. And I just think it's blending the line between like digital art on a screen and in our reality. And I think that now we're starting to have technology, because I think back at it and I'm like, what was the first like commercial implementation of AR? And I remember with the Google Glass. Does anybody remember the Google Glass?
For sure. They actually brought it back, and 3 days ago they just announced that they're ending it again.
Yeah, it turns out we were right the first time. We're not going to do it.
Like goofy thing, but like I think you know, obviously it was a little ahead of its time because look at it now. And I think what we really need, because it's still sort of a niche kind of thing. You know, it's cool. It's becoming more and more mainstream, but it's still sort of stuck as sort of a niche kind of thing. Look at me. Like I have like a fun helmet on my head or whatever. Just sort of like a fun tchotchke looking thing. I think what really needs to be done to sort of push it into, mainstream is a tool, some kind of peripheral that's not like a phone, because even pulling out a phone is kind of inconvenient. And it's like, okay, like, you know, I can make this appear on my phone, but it's still, I'm basically just like, it's looking at my phone. I think the Google Glass had a good idea. Of course, it was executed quite terribly, but I think that, and also sort of like what's being done on like the Quest, right? With all the cameras and like tracks everything. And that's the sort of thing I want more of. If it was more compact, more, I don't know, just better, really. In a way that's more useful and less of just like a goofy kind of like gimmick. It needs to push itself past the gimmick status before it can be really widely accepted. But I don't really know how to do that, because I'm like, I can't do that. So
yeah, not product engineers here.
Yeah. Now it is interesting though, because it's like, it's great for gaming, but it's cool that it's, you know, it started off as just gaming. Like I remember like 5-6 years ago, VR was, you didn't think about other features besides gaming. But it's cool now where it's like people are looking at it and they're like, yeah, it needs to be something besides that. Like, I'm ready for that next thing, you know? And it's cool that it's like, even when you mention VR, a lot of times people are thinking, or AR, they're just thinking about /XR. They're thinking about the practical uses of it.
Yeah.
They don't even think about gaming as much anymore. You know?
Yeah. I mean, I don't think it's a coincidence that some of the most recent headsets coming out, it's a net new feature, but they've decided to add sort of XR integrations.
And yeah, like a pass-through.
Even being able to see pass-through, seeing beyond the visor. So I think that everyone, exactly to your point, Logan, realizes, I mean, one, it's the barrier to entry is, I think for a lot of people, just cost and like the the skill burden of being able to set up a VR headset and
right.
Which one do I get? Do I get the ones that plug into my computer? Do I get the Quest, which is like, you know, kind of a grab and go thing. I think once we start distilling some of that stuff down and also just making it more affordable, you know,
right.
Even as someone who's interested in it, I see some of these higher end headsets and I'm like, well, I'm just not going to spend that kind of
money. I don't have $1,200 for to play like Surgeon Simulator. Like,
yeah, exactly. Like there's a lot of other things I should probably spend $1,200 on before I, you know, buy top of the line headset. So I agree with you 100%.
There's two headsets that have come out recently. Well, one is the HTC, their newest headset. It's really cool. Uses pancake lenses. I haven't tried it. Apparently it's got phenomenal pass through. And that's kind of like, I guess people are considering like the first big wow, can really see this being used for practical use and it's nice. And then they've announced that it's so good that they've said that they feel like it's a competitor or they're not even worried necessarily about what Apple's going to release. Apple is apparently going to be releasing their XR headset in the next few months, which is very exciting.
That is exciting.
Yeah, there's been some leaks on it. I'm excited because I feel like the biggest feature and complaint I have about it is trying to get my friends to join in on any of the experiences I'm on. Like having to like get on a cell phone, it's impossible. And if that was just in your field.
Yeah, plus, you know, the more that these big names start getting skin in the game, you know, hopefully the idea is that competition breeds innovation and, you know, it becomes more apparent what consumers have a tolerance for and what they want and what they don't want. So it's going to be interesting too, because I think it's been pretty raw. It's been raw innovation for several years and sort of, you know, bleeding edge. And now we're starting to find use cases. You know, you mentioned Shakespeare. I always think about Shakespeare's work because I think Shakespeare's kind of done a great job of like, when you think about, you know, extending reality and how brands can benefit from it. I mean, the fashion industry is a perfect place to start, where it's like,
without a doubt,
let's look at garments in 3D in to scale in space of what I'm looking at, or even just from an ad standpoint, being able to scan something and seeing, you know, a cool
avatar
wearing stuff.
If I want to like buy a shirt, but I don't know if it'll look good on me, you don't have to like go to the store and like try it on. You can just scan it with a phone. And I think what really changed my mind on like VR and AR, this was pretty recent, actually. It was at one of the XR meetups. I don't remember who I was talking to. And I think I already told you about this, Michael. But someone described to me like, oh, VR is starting to be implemented more so to help train like practicing doctors, like for surgery. And I'm like, oh, that's brilliant. You don't have to actually like put someone under the knife to like try to, you know, take out their appendix. You can just do it on like some fake person,
and like maybe like a little darker, but I'm pretty sure we use it for combat training so that people end up in an active war zone and be like, oh my god, I've never experienced it, you know. I mean, obviously nothing probably replaces being shot at in a war zone, but I would imagine the closest you're gonna get is, you know, some soundproof sound canceling headphones and an accurate VR headset. I mean, you're gonna feel immersed for sure. So yeah, there's just so many new use cases that are coming out, and I think that it's almost hard for me sometimes. It's like, what if I were to do a project, what would I want to do? I mean, mostly what I want to do is just like look at stuff I've made in 3D with a headset on, but that's pretty boring. So
yeah,
it is exciting to see just more use cases come up.
I'm excited. I feel like artists will get more into it when there's like a universal previewing experience where it's like a place I can just quickly upload and anybody can see it. That's not VR chat, even though I love VR chat, and I'm sorry, VR chat, if you're listening, but just something that's maybe a little, that's not as like collar around the neck that Meta is trying to put around people going into the metaverse, but has that freedom, like the freedom of VR chat, but has that professional look that Meta has. And it's just,
I think we've mentioned this before, but you know, QR codes are a great example of like 10 years ago, QR codes were proprietary, and you know, there were specific apps, both Android and iOS, that were, you downloaded if you want to scan a QR code. Now it's a universal sort of technology where apps and cameras, or camera apps that ship with phones, natively recognize a QR code and can take you to links, right? I would love, it would be amazing if I don't have to install anything, if I don't have to download an app, if I don't have to make an account for another app, because my God, how many do I have? If I can just pull out my camera, scan something, QR code maybe, whatever, and then I'm able to now just, have an interactive 3D, you know, 3D viewer on my phone. That'd be great.
You're absolutely right. I feel like the number one killer for me is like someone's like, oh, hey, check out this new like AR experience that I just made. I'm like, oh, cool. It's like, okay, yeah. Like, I'd love to see it. They're like, okay, first you have to download this app. I'm like, oh, I have to download something?
Done. I mean, that's it's terrible that sometimes that is enough of a barrier for me. But it is. I mean, it really is. If I have to download stuff, if I have to get certain codecs, if I have to get certain converters, I mean, the my excitement level is diminishing very quickly, you know?
What is it?
And I feel bad because it's because I know there's incredible work out there that I've just yet to experience just because, you know, whether it's a software or a hardware limitation, I'm not quite ready to leap through those hurdles.
Right.
Yeah. Definitely. I think it's kind of like even, I think it's the website Click of Three. I don't know. I remember hearing about this in a web class I took, but it's like, anything that takes three clicks to get to essentially will never be seen by anybody. Like if you have a web page and you have to go into a page, and that next page is just will be seen by zero people, guaranteed. But yeah, it's the same thing with AR. Like if you have to take a picture, open up an app, download the app, re-go into the app, make an account, like there is no way. Fun thing I'm thinking to though, I just thought of this when we were talking about the Apple stuff. I wonder if, like, you know, it's cool because they're doing the M chip series, and like the M2 I heard is really good. And so I wonder if like they've been focusing on the processing power, because now it works with like Redshift and you can do ray tracing and stuff.
Oh, does it really? I didn't know that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty insane. It's nice. Like it's one thing I like about the Mac, that I have the M1. The M2 I think is like way better. And then I'm just assuming the M3, if you could use that power on their new, if they have an M3 chip with a new headset, that would be insane. I also have this is a conspiracy theory that they've refused to make a VR AR headset emoji until they release theirs, because they don't want to be promoting for like Meta or anybody to be talking about it until they release their headset, and then they'll let anybody post about it. But
that's interesting. I actually had no idea that Apple was developing a VR AR headset, which is very exciting, because I think that they have some of the best like facial recognition kind of technology in the game.
Yeah, that's a good point too,
because I feel like whenever like the most impressive AR experiences I've had have been utilizing those technologies, where it's like, you know, it's harder for other cameras to sort of capture that detail. But what we know, obviously, Apple's had the face recognition since like the iPhone 10. They've had years and years and years to develop it, and being able to utilize that technology for whatever they could possibly want would make it so much easier for them to make something that stands out from the crowd.
Yeah, and coupled with LiDAR, it's pretty. Doesn't even need to be proprietary anymore. I mean, if you can implement LiDAR, you can start scanning stuff, and you know, in theory, use that as authentication or personalization in VR or all that.
That's very interesting. It's interesting to think how much other technology they already have, and just incorporating those things that we haven't seen, you know, implemented yet.
Who knows how much they have just like completely hidden away.
More than we probably realize. Yeah. I would imagine. I mean, or not. Maybe they're just, if they are, good on them, just making it up as they go.
Even just new users buying, everything's already connected to your Apple ID. Like, say you wanted to buy something in the metaverse, you just buy it off your Apple ID.
Just get
it on the App Store. Yeah.
Just everything. Yeah. All the apps, like integration would probably. Yeah, there's a lot. You know, there hasn't been a cell phone provider that has had the opportunity to do a cross branding or bridge for just mobile apps or games or anything or any features. So, that's some new fun stuff. Well, all right. Well, I think that was a great coverage of everything. Andrew, did you have any more questions or?
I mean, honestly, I feel like we nailed a lot, so I feel pretty good.
All right. Well, Logan, was there anything you wanted to mention or anything you think we didn't cover or anything else you would like to talk about?
Yeah, when I'm gonna get my XR Motion data hat, by the way.
It's right here, buddy. It's right here.
I don't have mine in here, but I love my XR Motion.
I was so upset. I wanted to like pop on and be like repping the brand and oh.
Wait, XR Motion data hat, it's top merch for sure. If you're listening and you go to our Instagram, we've got merch now. Dad hat is it's in my weekly wardrobe.
Yeah. Oh yeah. What was that? What was that? That like 3D artist one. I saw that and I had to have it.
So we might be. I guess you were one of the few people that liked it. We had a few likes on it. I kind of took it down because I'm thinking I like this idea of doing limited industry drops and kind of making apparel for industry. It's something me and Andrew been talking about. It's kind of exciting. You know, maybe posted it a little too early. Just wanted to test the waters, but. Yeah, it's there. We'll probably be doing more limited drops coming up. So keep an eye out on that. And again, if you're on Instagram, you can just click the shop right there and buy it right off the shop. Like talking about minimal lag time. You can just bam. Not that many.
Yeah, it's not an extra app. You don't need another app.
That's only like two clicks. It's not even the third one. You're good to go.
All right, man. Well, anything else? Anything we should be looking out for, Logan, that you might be dropping soon?
Geez, I guess nothing too big coming up on the horizon. I'm going to keep working on that that series like I was talking about, making more of that really crazy stuff. Otherwise, I'm just going to keep posting my stuff on Instagram. Working on my LinkedIn right now. I got my website. But yeah, that's enough of my self-promo. I don't mean to name drop everything, but...
No, this is all about you. So, well... But- Anyway, guys, this has been an amazing podcast. Logan, thank you so much for coming on, man. This was a great talk.
Thank you for having me. I've been dying to come on ever since I heard you guys are making this. So,
yeah, we will absolutely invite you back in 15 months' time when your senior thesis is done. And
I was talking to somebody about having like what is it called when you like first
viewing
view it.
Party
viewing that's the one. Oh,
yeah, yeah, yeah. We'll do it. So we're looking forward to it, but just to echo Michael's points, I really appreciate you taking the time and keep up the incredible work. Excited to see what you got coming down.
Jeez, thank you, I appreciate it.